This is Marking Out. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. Follow on Twitter. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. Marking out. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. Spreading like fisting. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. We're marking out. Pro Wrestling Talk by Pro Wrestling Fans.
Welcome to Marking Out, Pro Wrestling Talk by Pro Wrestling Fans. This is episode 811. Thank you so, so very much for listening. Make sure you are listening at markingout.com. Also on Spotify or wherever else you are downloading podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating to go with a 5-star frog splash. Also, make sure that you are buying a t-shirt at prowrestlingtees.com/markingout. Give us a follow on TikTok at Marking Out, on Twitter at Marking Out, on Facebook, give us a like at Marking Out, the page. And then on Instagram at Marking Out 11, you can follow me, Dave the Rave, on all social media platforms at DavidPTDPT. Follow Chris at CMSweeney85 and Chris Sweendog. And follow Brandon at BTTG161. Brandon, how are you?
I am doing awesome as always. How about yourself?
I am doing lovely and dandy. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful weather that we have outside right now.
I mean, it's darkish. It's like cloudy.
Yeah, it's raining by me.
Oh, so that was sarcasm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we did have great weather over the weekend. I did grill. Literally, the only thing I was looking forward to was grilling corn. I had burgers to grill also. The corn was spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was quite disappointing. And then I couldn't find my freaking seasoning for my burgers, so that was annoying. Then I finally found it, and everything else went off without a hitch, so thank God for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went on Sunday with my aunt and uncle, my cousins, and my Nana to a TikTok famous Italian joint, which I will not name. The food I thought was incredibly mid.
Oh, I definitely want to find out where.
The vegetables were, I would say, like 99% sure they were frozen and not fresh.
You didn't send it back or anything?
No, I mean, what are you going to do? Like, well, oh, this isn't fresh vegetables. These were previously frozen vegetables.
Yeah, tell them, ask them what's up with that.
Nah, the dish was fine, but it wasn't. If you're viral on TikTok, brother, come on. Focus on your food instead of your videos.
Was it Morton's Steakhouse?
Morton's Steakhouse is not an Italian restaurant. I said Italian. I don't know if I said that.
Yeah, no, you did say Italian. Was it, let's see.
You're not going to guess. What's Luigi's? It was Mario's.
Oh, the best Italian food. You should check out. Oh, was it Ivorone?
No, Ivorone is a marketplace, and I have major, pun intended, beef with them.
Ooh,
their
do
food
tell.
Is,
why? What's the beef?
The food from Ivorone Brothers is decent, but they were, the manager was an absolute a-hole to me, I'll say that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ooh, so where was the Italian place?
It was on Long Island.
Oh, man.
How was your weekend?
Well, definitely go to Luigi's. That's probably a lot better.
Where are you? Where's Luigi's?
Where is it? New Hyde Park. New Hyde Park. It's
are they
delicious.
TikTok famous? Is that why you're guessing Luigi's or no?
No. I've been there before. I've been with Chris a few times or... I went with Chris before, but I've been there a few times. Oh, it was Umberto's. He just texted me. It's Umberto's.
It wasn't Umberto's.
Jeez. Brandon, going after Umberto's.
I haven't been to Umberto's in quite some time, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And by the way, speaking of Italian food, I went to another pizza place this week.
Oh, Gino's.
No. Yeah, Gino's where? Gino's east, west, left, north, south. Literally everywhere. But the pizza place that I went to this week had a bowl, an edible bread bowl with salad in it. And I was like, well, that's not what I was going to order, but that's what I'm ordering. And I thought that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fun take on an old classic.
Nice, 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 nice.
But how was your week?
My week was very, very good. Very good. You know? But we had an episode of Monday Night Raw that took place this week, kicking off with Stephanie Vaquer. And Stephanie Vaquer, damn, she is so hot.
Okay.
So, so hot.
I didn't realize you did that on this show.
Oh, yeah. When it comes to Stephanie Vaquer, 100%. So hot.
Well, she called Liv Morgan out, and the Judgment Day came out, and she challenged Liv Morgan to get in the ring. It led to fighting. Stephanie Vaquer had a short comeback, but she got taken out, and then Becky Lynch showed up, which worked in her favor at first, but she eventually also got put down, and the two of them were left there, lying there on the ring mat, while the Judgment Day stood tall. So.
Yeah, I thought that was nice, all of it. You know, I thought that I liked how Stephanie Vaquer was able to get the upper hand at the start of it. Yeah. But then, of course, it played out where she was outnumbered. You know, but I did like that Stephanie Vaquer showed, like, really no fear. Like, the first thing she did was she went right at Liv Morgan once they got into the ring. And, yeah, it was very, I think, a solid opener. But yeah. Next up, you had Javon Evans pick up the victory over JD McDonagh. This matchup was good, but I don't know. It was expected for me.
It gets set up during the commercial break where I didn't see that part, but I believe commentary said it. Dominic was complaining about not being in that tournament to face Roman Reigns, and it somehow led to this, but Dominic got involved here, and at one point, Javon Evans hurt his knee on a jump, and JD McDonagh was able to work on that. I think, stupidly, Javon Evans went for that OG cutter, and he missed it. He landed on his feet. That hurts his knee, and JD McDonagh had control, but then he missed his moonsault, and Javon went up again and hit that OG cutter, still, by the way, selling after the match, the hurt knee. But getting your leg worked on and missing the OG cutter twice only to win, I feel like, is kind of dumb.
I agree with you. I thought that was... didn't make sense to me.
And then, of course, Big Cass attacked Javon Evans afterwards, and he walked off, and we got one of those, like, Jeff Hardy moments where Javon grabbed the microphone. He's like, is that all you got? And Javon Evans limped his way into a dive. He had the upper hand. And then Dominic Mysterio ends up throwing him into the ring post, and that ended that momentum for him. So,
yeah,
like we said...
I like that, too.
Like we said last week, we need an end game with Big Cass.
They definitely do need a big end game with him. But what did you like the fact that Javon Evans did have his moments of the upper hand over?
Yeah, that I'm fine with, especially because he was still selling that injury from the match with JD McDonagh.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
After that, though,
go back and forth.
We had Rey Fénix pick up the victory over El Fiscal to advance in that tournament. The WWE Espanol account posted a video from 1997 of Abismo Negro making his WWE debut on Superstars earlier in the day, so I thought that was really cool. That's El Fiscal's father. But with this match, like with Laredo Kid the other week, it was great to see El Fiscal on Monday Night Raw. And this was an enjoyable match here.
I'm not familiar with him at all. Fiscal, I don't know anything about him. I did actually like the physique of, like, him and actually Wagner Jr. They both are Lucha Libre wrestlers, but their size is... Yeah, they're the bigger guys. Like, I wasn't expecting... I saw pictures of Fiscal And even Wagner Jr. I've seen him before, but I always forget. But then when he's in the ring against like Dragon Lee and then Fiscal with Phoenix, you really notice the size difference. And I thought that Fiscal and Phoenix put on an excellent, excellent match together. And I think that this was a big showing for Phoenix to show what WWE does have.
Ray Phoenix has been what they can absolutely lose. Killing it. He has been killing it on AAA, Raw, SmackDown. He's about to on NXT.
Yeah, I think that they have to really do something with Phoenix. I mean,
what do you mean? This something? Was he's great, champion, and then you saw wrestling every single day.
Yeah. Now, I didn't even notice, but did Dominic have his AAA belt?
Because
I know that was a thing with, like, sometimes he has his championship and sometimes he doesn't. But I know Phoenix had his.
I don't recall.
That's the thing, and Phoenix was wearing his on the entrance. So I think that, I mean, I've been seeing all those rumors on YouTube about Dirty Dom is unhappy and this and that about the carryover of his character with AAA. Who knows what's accurate and what's not? No, nobody really knows the truth. But I thought this was a great match. And then later on,
I like the Lee tombstone spot, yeah, by the way, of that match. Oh, I thought dude. Was really... It's like there's so much history behind that spot, and commentary covered it a little bit, so I was happy to have that in there. So,
oh, I didn't know any of the history with the spot,
because it's banned in Mexico.
Oh, I thought maybe that was like his move, because
his father would use that.
Ah, I didn't know that. I thought that it was just like something, because the way that he took it and he just did the full 360 with it and then went to land it, but then got reversed. I thought that was really special.
Yeah.
And then in the next matchup, later on in the tournament, Dragon Lee picked up victory over El Hijo de Dr. Wagner Jr. And I thought, once again, this was a solid match. Probably my favorite part of this matchup was, what was it? I think it was Wagner. It may have been Fiscal, but I'm not too sure. But it was a spot where, let me see. Actually, it may have been the other one. But somebody did something to, went to go do something to Wagner on the apron, and he caught him in the powerbomb position and powerbombed it back into the ring. I can't remember if that was Wagner Jr. or Fiscal. Like, they went to do a hurricanrana from the turnbuckle to them on the standing on the apron, going to the outside, but the larger guy caught him and powerbombed him back into the ring. I thought that was awesome. I think it may have actually been Wagner.
I feel like this match could have gone either way. And I enjoy the fact that both matches had time.
So the one thing that... So I texted you about it, but I like that they had time. The one thing that I really don't like is that it's really a predictable tournament, though.
I mean...
I know we just said it could have went either way, but there was no way that Dragon... In my eyes, Dragon Lee wasn't going to lose to Wagner Jr. On Monday Night Raw.
I was very, very up in the air here with that.
So that's the thing. Like, to me,
the other matches, obviously La Parca versus Psycho Clown.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, more so, that's the thing. Like, the one match where you have people that are like, I know everybody's current in AAA, but really AAA based is the Psycho Clown and La Parca. Like, but the other ones, I feel like at least one of them, I mean, obviously not Penta, but whether it was Dragon Lee or Fiscal, or just have another, like, maybe two more, extend the bracket a little bit. But I wanted to see more AAA people pick up victories.
I feel like it's going to come down to Lucha Bros facing Penta? Off.
Oh, Phoenix and then Penta, then what, Penta facing Roman Reigns?
Yeah.
Where is the match? It's at Monday Night Raw, but when?
In Mexico, yeah.
Okay, when is it supposed to conclude?
Conclude would be before Triple Mania, I think.
And is this early match September. At? Is this match at? No, it's at Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
Why aren't they not? Is this Monday Night Raw after Triple Mania?
Yeah.
All right. Hopefully they could do something at Triple Mania. Like, it would be really cool
just
if Roman Reigns...
Triple Mania. What are you doing?
I don't know. It would be really cool if Reigns appeared at Triple Mania.
If there was like, a reason to, it would be, but I don't know. But Dragon Lee ends up reversing what I was assuming would be an attempt at a Wagner driver and hit Operation Dragon to get that victory there.
Yeah, there was. I was surprised. Like Dragon Lee picking him up, Wagner in that. That's the move with the muscle buster, right?
No, that's Ray Phoenix's Mexican muscle buster.
Ray Phoenix's. Okay, you see, I'm confusing both matches. I was really taken back by Phoenix hitting that muscle buster finisher on Fisco, especially because of the size difference. Like, both of these two matches were awesome. But next up, you had Sol Ruka pick up the victory over Lyra Valkyria. I wasn't into this match.
It was
did nothing to me.
It was kind of even, but I would say Lyra had more control of it. And I thought she was going to win, but I guess this would just further her breakdown going off the deep end here.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives Sola a victory there. After that, we had Bron Breakker come out calling out Obafemi, but it was Paul Heyman who showed up instead. And Bron Breakker told Paul Heyman to tell him who he thinks is the future of WWE. And then Obafemi came out, which I like when Oba like imitated Bron Breakker. He dropped his accent to make fun of him. And then Paul Heyman said that if Bron Breakker takes a step towards Obafemi, he takes a step away from him. And he spoke about how a match like that should be promoted to be the biggest match it can possibly be. And then, kind of ironically, it's on Sunday night's main event. I don't know if that's necessarily the biggest match it could possibly be, but we'll get that there.
I thought that, I mean, something that I marked out for this was with the entire Oba doing his impression of Bron Breakker. I thought that was hilarious.
And I like that.
He nailed it really well, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, nailed what?
His impression of Bron Breakker.
But I feel like that's just his normal voice.
Who, you think that was Oba's normal voice?
Well, not obviously he's not, like, normal voice, but his accent, we know, is not real.
Legit.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that it did sound like Bron Breakker.
I like that Paul Heyman line, though, with, like, if you take one step towards him, you take one way away from me. I thought that was a really well-done, delivered line.
Mm-hmm.
After that,
we
had Chad Gable in the main event pick up the victory over Rey Mysterio to retain the Intercontinental Championship. Fan-freaking-tastic main event.
Agreed.
A lot of people said that the fans during this Monday Night Raw sucked. I feel like from my memory, a lot of these fans were cheering throughout these matches. Like, there might have been, like, lull moments, but I felt like, like, people posted clips during the Lucha Libre matches, and they were like, this crowd sucks. I was like, but when they do the other moves, they're, like, popping for them.
Yeah, I thought that there was still action. Like, they did react to some of the moves, not everything, but...
And I thought, you know, for this match, they had them eating out of their hands. That angle slam from the middle rope I thought was great. The pop that Rey Mysterio got when he got out of the ankle lock was fantastic. And then Chad Gable caught it, got the ankle lock back on. They did some like Rey Mysterio, Kurt Angle spots there. And then they popped again when he sent Chad Gable into the corner and hit that 619 twice.
Yeah, and it was an incredible match.
He went up for the splash. Gable got his knees up, and he locked in the ankle lock one more time, which Rey tried to fight out of, but Chad Gable held on, and Rey finally rolls through for a pin. Chad Gable rolled back and gets the victory there. I thought that was a great ending to that match.
I agree. I thought this was very, very enjoyable.
And then we close Monday Night Raw with the Bloodline. Roman Reigns comes out and with Jacob Fatu and demanded the Usos bring him Solo Sikoa. And they were, I thought it was really funny, during the entrance, they were having like the time of their lives rubbing it in Solo's face. And Roman plays a video of Solo Sikoa losing to him on the Netflix debut episode of Monday Night Raw. And Roman, Solo Sikoa is kind of like not taking to Roman Reigns here. He's kind of also, to me, if I play it back in my head, it's like how the Usos were acting when they brought Solo out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not a care in the world, kind of like LOL sort of situation. And
it was just weird. I don't understand the why. Like, yeah, they were rubbing it in his face and stuff, but I don't know. There's something, yeah.
Well, because they thought he was going to have to serve them. But obviously that's not
the
case.
It just seemed like they were being stupid.
And Roman Reigns took Solo's glasses off and stomped them. He got pissed off at Solo during that moment. And he asked why he's not on his knees begging him. And Jacob Fatu, I would say, maybe took it upon himself. Super kicked Solo Sikoa, locked in the Tongan death grip, which Roman breaks off. He then introduces that he's got Ulafalas for Jimmy and Jay, not for Jacob Fatu. And then LA Knight showed up, and the Usos went after him, but he ducked them. Jacob Fatu attacked him. Roman Reigns stopped him from continuing the attack. And then Roman hit him with the Superman punch. Roman told Solo Sikoa to end LA Knight. And they're holding LA Knight for that Samoan spike, and he sets up for it. Boom, hits it on Roman Reigns instead. And the fans went nuts.
I thought that this was awesome. Yeah, I thought that this was awesome.
He took the Usos out. LA Knight hit the BFT. And Jacob Fatu just stood there because of what Roman Reigns said. And then Roman went for a Superman punch. He ends up eating a BFT. I thought Roman was going to accidentally hit the Superman punch on Jacob Fatu.
Mm-hmm.
But he ate the BFT. And then obviously Jacob Fatu listened to Roman Reigns' orders there. So that's probably going to bite him in his ass somehow.
Oh, yeah. The one thing, I mean, everything was really good in this segment. I really don't like the BFT.
Why?
I don't know. That's LA Knight's move, right?
Yeah, the headlock driver.
Yeah, I don't like it.
That's one of my favorite finishers. I use that in 2K.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? I don't know. I feel like it's just so simple.
You're literally driving somebody's face into the ring mat.
It doesn't make sense to me.
In what world? What do you mean?
I mean, if he Russian leg sweep the leg, it would look a lot better.
You're taking a headlock and forcing it down onto the mat. You're in wrestling. You should have, like, that's a simple takedown.
Exactly.
Like,
boom. It's simple. It's simple.
But it's impact.
You just said it. You just said it. It's
no,
simple.
But it's impact. That's like saying an X Factor sucks. You're literally driving somebody's face first into the ring mat with force.
I mean, definitely the best theme song, underrated theme song.
Which version?
Uncle Cracker.
The edited Uncle Cracker version. Moving from Monday Night Raw, we had Cruz Montana open up NXT, and he called Zilla Fatu out, and he said he's not letting Zilla come in and take what's his. And somebody told him that Zilla Fatu was not there yet. And then Rey Fénix came out, which I popped big time for. I thought it was really cool because they have so much history together. And there was mutual respect there. And Montana was like, I'm going to let you do your thing. And I'm going to go to the NXT, the most dangerous part in the locker room. Not locker room, whatever. The dangerous part of this place, the parking lot.
The parking lot.
So Fénix was obviously out there to see who's going to be the number one contender for that AAA Cruiserweight Championship. And we see EK Prosper.
I do love how that's a thing.
What?
I do love how that's a thing that everybody like knows that the parking lot is dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, it's a running gag at this point where it's just known.
But we had EK Prosper pick up the victory over Tristan Angels, La Parca, and Romeo Moreno to become number one contender. A lot of people were like, Booker T is a dumb idiot. I also didn't like Booker T talking about Laparca as if it was the same person in WCW. I believe this is the second or third time he's done that now.
I mean, he's playing up his
gimmick. Like, it's fine to be stupid like that if you're commentating. I just, yeah. It's like, it's not necessary, but I 100% understand it.
That's the thing. I get it. I understand it. There's other things that Booker T does that I don't like. So this is nothing compared to, you know, I think that Booker T should be replaced and just go focus at reality
wrestling. I think
Booker T
and Vic Joseph is a fantastic, I like, literally, that's my favorite commentary team.
No, not me.
I thought this match was really
Matt
fun.
Stryker. I'd rather have Matt Stryker back. Actually, no, I take that back. No, I don't.
But the frog splash spot, I think, was my favorite one. From Romeo Moreno to the outside, I thought that was really cool. And I thought for sure we were going to see Tristan Angels steal this victory here, which he almost did. But it was actually EK Prosper who got the victory. He hit the running knee off of Moreno's back to Tristan Angels, hit the running knee to Moreno, and then hit that moonsault, which is still a great moonsault. I think this match is funny not for two reasons, but it's funny that Laparca was in this because we have him trying to become number one contender for the Cruiserweight Championship while also in a tournament to face Roman Reigns for the World Heavyweight Championship. That surely has to be a first.
Mm-hmm.
But Laparca didn't end up moving on anyway, so.
Yeah, it didn't really make that much of a difference. But next still, up you
still
had...
still funny to think about.
Yeah. Natty picked his victory over Thea Hale.
I was looking forward to this big time. For quite some time. Since they first did that spot together. A few weeks or months. I don't remember how long ago it was. I think it's absolutely delivered. It was very technical, very grounded pound like I thought it was going to be. Natty ends up making Thea Hale tap out with the sharpshooter. And then Carmen Petrovich and Nikita Lyons held Jada Parker down. And Natty locked in that sharpshooter again. I thought maybe we're going to see somebody make the save there, but that didn't happen. I assume at Heatwave we're going to see Natty versus Jada Parker in some sort of not a submission match, but something. Maybe we'll see a fight pit. Who knows?
Ooh.
I feel like we'll see that. We'll probably have that announced next week, maybe.
It's very possible. But next up, you had Alexis King pick the victory over Lucien Price to retain his precious
championship.
Yeah.
Which Lucien Price almost got the victory right away. And for a good chunk of this match, he was manhandling Lexus King. But Birthright, of course, they cheated to help Lexus King hit that coronation with literally like seconds left. I think there's like 30 seconds left. And Birthright beat Lucien Price down afterwards. Bronco Nima made the save. So we got that spot there from OTM. The Wrestling Observer spoiled AAA this weekend, so that pissed me off.
That sucks.
Now I know something. Which I'll talk about next really week, sucks. I guess. After that match, we had Grayson Waller come out. And he said that he's not afraid of Zilla Fatu. He's not afraid of all of his family members. And he said that he's pretty sure that he's number one contender. And then Tony D'Angelo came out and he said that it doesn't matter who steps up, he's going to knock them all down. And then Cruz Montana showed up and said Grayson Waller was laid out last week, so he probably would have been the number one contender. And he was like, we could fight for it, and then the winner faces Tony. And then Robert Stone showed up and he set up a match for Heat Wave with the three of them. And then said he'll handle Zilla Fatu. So we'll put a pin in that.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. But Next up, you had Cali Armstrong and Kalani Jordan pick up the victory over Ren QCC.
I think Cali and Kalani worked very well together as a team. Like, mm-hmm. this was a great match for both of them as a tag team. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it. The equilibrium aspect of Kendall Gray came into this a bit. She also fell ear first into the steps again. So
I thought
maybe we would see Ren QCC win this, but it makes, I guess, more sense for the heels in this to win.
Mm-hmm.
After that, Jackson Drake picked up the victory over Shiloh Hill to become number one contender for the North American Championship. We saw the Vanity Project get involved multiple times to where I thought we were going to see Lizzie Rain run down and help Shiloh out. That never happened. I thought for sure we would see that. I like the lariat, by the way, that Shiloh Hill hit. I think it's obviously similar to the one that Dean Ambrose, John Moxley does, but mm-hmm. at the same time, very different. So I like that move. But when Vanity Project got involved again, the referee ends up catching them, tries to kick them from ringside. They begged the referee to let them stay, and then Shiloh Hill dove onto them. And then the referee got taken down a bit after by mistake. And then Naraku ends up spitting mist. And Drake was able to hit the 450 to get the victory there.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And then to close NXT, Zilla Fatu had a contract signing where he said that he never thought he'd be in WWE. I thought this was pretty charismatic. The whole internet's like, LOL, he said the wrong word. I honestly couldn't care less in that moment. I just thought he looked like a young rock. He like spoke very charismatically.
I mean, I wouldn't go with all that.
What do you mean?
I didn't see. He didn't look like a young rock to me.
100%. What do you mean? He had the glasses, the shirt, the hair.
I would have never even put the.
He looked exactly like the early rendition of, like, right after, like, when Rocky Maivia started to become The Rock. That's what he looked like. You could do a side by side picture. Saying, but it was, like, pretty spot on there.
Mm-hmm.
But Grayson Waller came out, Cruz Montana came out, Robert Stone announced that Zilla's first match is a title match. No longer a triple threat, fatal four-way.
So and how does that work?
Why and the IWC gets no pissed. Longer,
yeah, why is it no longer a triple fatal four-way?
He's no longer a triple threat.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean,
because he's handling Zilla Fatu. What do you mean?
I don't know.
Zilla, when it was announced, was not a WWE superstar. He wasn't signed to NXT. Now it's a fatal four-way.
True. I don't know. I don't agree that people are saying that he's a, what is it, a Nippo baby?
Well,
you know, not a Nippo. Nepo, yeah. Like a Nepo baby. You know,
I mean, technically, yes, he is. But at the same time, there are people who are not like, they don't deserve.
Even if he is, I mean, that's the thing. He's worked for it. And
yeah, that they don't deserve.
Nothing for nothing. That. He could be a Nepo baby, but his father's Umaga. His father's not Ric Flair. Umaga is great and legendary in his own right, but I don't think he's going to have as much street cred as a Ric Flair,
well,
Hulk Hogan, or
at the same
legendary
time,
name
it's
like
that. That family in general.
I mean, I don't know. It doesn't seem, to me, it's just some guy coming in that's going to tear the house, you know? And I hope he does. I don't know why people are so wanting to see this kid fail after coming back from doing time in jail, rewriting his life, getting onto a clean path, a healthy path, doing the right thing. And now everybody, even though this guy, his kid, is doing the right thing, everybody wants to see him fail? Screw you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't understand that. Like, the kid, and he is a kid. How old is he?
Is he like 19?
Right? He's a kid. So we're all going, grown adults want to see a kid not succeed.
Oh, he's not 19, he's 26.
Okay, but even still, 26 is still young. Just doesn't make sense. Like, the person did so much good to make his life, put himself in a better position for him and his family, his help out with his mom, and now everybody wants to be against him? When even though the same people were crapping themselves about how good he is on MLW and stuff, and how great it is to see him tagging with Fatu, with,
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make sense to me. And screw you, IWC, and also up yours, Dave Meltzer.
So that is NXT moving over to SmackDown, which opened with Sami Zayn yelling at Nick Aldis backstage for literally everything. And Randy Orton showed up when his name was mentioned. And then it cut to Cody Rhodes in the ring calling Randy Orton out, and Cody wanted to fight. Nick Aldis stopped it. And he said that if anything happens before Sunday night's main event, neither of them are getting a title shot again. And Randy Orton said that Cody is, he's a good guy. He saw last week what happened, knew Cody wasn't going to do it because that's just not him. And he can't do what Randy Orton does. Cody, very interestingly, to end this, used the Paul Heyman line about him beating Randy Orton not being a prediction, but a spoiler. I don't know what to make of that. We had the MFT pick up the victory over the Judgment Day to retain the tag team championships. The MFT started this before the bell, but the match itself wasn't as chaotic as the opening. And I like the stuff between Tala Tonga and Damian Priest. We don't really normally see that these days between two big guys. That one spot after Tala Tonga chokeslammed Damian Priest on the apron, R-Truth rolled up Tama Tonga. Got like a crazy 2.9 count there. And then the MFT end up taking R-Truth out to get the victory there. Later on, we saw a video with Shinsuke Nakamura and now Takahashi. We know he's in WWE. That's not his name. It's going to take me a bit to get that down pat, but I'm so happy to see Takahashi in WWE. I'm interested to see where this leads to. Obviously, he's feuding Nakamura and Takahashi with the MFT. We had Blake Monroe versus Julia not happen. Blake attacked Julia from behind when Julia was making her entrance. I don't really like Julia not having any offense there. That's not Julia. We know who Julia is. That's not her. After that, Trick Williams came out, called out Baron Corbin. He wants a match for the title on SmackDown. And Baron Corbin said no. And Corbin said that Trick has nothing to offer him, which then Lil Yachty smacked Baron Corbin with the kendo stick. And because the whole thing with Trick not having anything to offer Baron Corbin, I felt like it should have been Trick Williams offering up his hair because it fits with the story of Baron Corbin shaving the U.S. Championship. Instead, Corbin said he wants 5 minutes with Lil Yachty. And if he survives, Trick gets the title shot. So at Sunday night's main event, we're going to be seeing Lil Yachty versus Baron Corbin. We saw Lash Legend pick up the victory over Tiffany Stratton. I really liked the segment backstage earlier with Chelsea Green, Tiffany Stratton, and Paige and Fatal Influence. But this match, somewhat even, Tiffany Stratton came into this match all banged up. But I feel like she held her own. In the end, though, she went for a PME. Lash Legend pushes her to stop that and then hits the lash extension, gets the victory. Nia Jax hit a leg drop afterwards. Chelsea Green came out with the kendo stick to make the save. I enjoyed all of that, the segments there. And in the main event, CM Punk picked up the victory over Kevin Owens to retain the WWE Championship. Earlier, Randy Orton told CM Punk he's waiting for the title. Finn Balor told Kevin Owens that he's waiting for the title. I like them showing pictures when they were going over that promo beforehand. They showed pictures of both of them in Ring of Honor. But this match was crazy. There was so much action in this. They fought a lot outside of the ring. I'm going to forgive that given the circumstances of their history. Earlier in the match, I liked when CM Punk fixed the commentary table after Kevin Owens took the top cowl off. And then later on, Kevin Owens splashed CM Punk through it. And then he hit a swanton in the ring. Punk kicks out. Kevin Owens caught a GTS, locked in a sharpshooter. Punk got out of that. Kevin Owens went for a stunner. And CM Punk pushed him into the referee. Kevin Owens ends up pushing CM Punk into the referee to reverse a move. He hits the stunner. Obviously, there's no ref. CM Punk hits the GTS. Still, there's no referee. Sami Zayn ran out. And he threw CM Punk into the ring post. He hid from Kevin Owens and got CM Punk back into the ring. Kevin hits another stunner. Punk kicks out at the absolute very last second. Like earlier, that spot with Damian Priest, with R-Truth and Tama Tonga was like, holy crap. This was an insane near fall. And Sami Zayn gave Kevin Owens a title to use. Kevin Owens didn't want to use it. And Sami Zayn ends up smashing KO with the title. CM Punk hit another GTS, gets the victory there. And then Sami Zayn clocks CM Punk with the title. Kevin Owens went after him. He ate another title shot. And then CM Punk also ate another title shot. So this, like I said, man, this was crazy. It was such a good match. I enjoyed the absolute heck out of that. And I, overall, outside of the little things where, like, the Julia thing, I feel like is not what we need to be seeing right now. I enjoyed this episode of SmackDown. Gonna take a quick little break right now, and I'll be right back here on Marking Out.
Hey, you guys, it's Rob Paulson here. Are you a wrestling fan? I am. That's why I listen to Marking Out, because it's a badass show, just like me. Well, I'm not really badass. I'm about 150 pounds and soaking wet. But still, in my mind, I'm badass. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Marking Out, episode 811. Moving back to AAA from last week, it kicked off with El Grande Americano and Dominic Mysterio brawling backstage, and it spilled to the ring. Rey Mysterio broke it up, but El Grande Americano went to keep going. Dom ends up punching him below the belt, and then Dom got in Rey Mysterio's face. And El Grande Americano said that it's more personal for him, this match now, and he asked Dominic how he thinks people will remember this era compared to eras with legends like El Santo, Mil Máscaras, Blue Demon, Rey Mysterio. And El Grande Americano said that they're never going to remember Dominic because they gave everything for wrestling. Dom spent his career taking away from it. And a true king never runs. With or without the championship, he's still king. But at Triple Mania, he's taking that title. You had Rey Fénix pick up the victory over Noisy Boy to retain the championship. This was another great defense for Fénix. And a damn good match for Noisy Boy, too. I could have watched this even longer than it went. Noisy Boy, at one point, missed the moonsault. Fénix hits the Mexican Muscle Buster, gets the victory. But very well done. Penta came out, and he said that Roman Reigns has never faced a wrestler like him before. And said that when he wins the tournament, he'll show Roman Reigns who he is. And then Carmen Petrovic showed up, and Perros del Mal surrounded him. They all hugged. And Daga spoke about continuing the group, and he mentioned Penta needing his family to beat Roman Reigns, kind of offering that service. They gave Penta a shirt. Penta, I believe, said he'll think about it, and then Daga gave him until the end of the night. And Penta said that he respects Daga, but needs to know everybody wearing that shirt has earned it. And Bronco Nima got in Penta's face to question who is dead weight in that group. And he said that if he beats Penta, Penta has to join. So we'll see that next week. Main event saw La Parca pick up the victory over Psycho Clown to advance in that tournament to see who faces Roman Reigns for the World Heavyweight Championship in Mexico. Psycho Clown's ribs were taped up, so that played into the match. And Psycho Clown, he hyped himself up big time here, ripped off his own mask, his face, and then the lights went out. And when they came back on, Drake Moreau was there, attacked Psycho Clown, and then La Parca, who had no idea that that happened, hit Thriller, got the victory. Moving over to TNA Impact, it kicked off with Order 4, where Mustafa Ali called for a state of emergency. And he spoke about Jason Hotch winning the championship and said that he's not a good man. And everything that his family has is because of him. And he turned his focus to John Skyler and told him that he's going to prove his loyalty to Order 4 and fight Jason Hotch. And Skyler and Steele seemed like they were completely against this. And then later on, we saw Jason Hotch pick up the victory over John Skyler, but via disqualification. Hotch didn't want the match, but Daria threatened him if he didn't compete. Mustafa Ali ends up sending Mila Moore out to tell John Skyler, like, this is not what the order was. The order wasn't to wrestle. It was to take Hotch out. And then Ali's Secret Service surrounded the ring, which Hotch fought him off. And Agent Zero ends up taking him out. And then Mustafa Ali got in the ring and he told Hotch that he doesn't leave Order 4 until he says he does. We had Rich Swann pick up the victory over Mr. Elegance. M distracted the referee and Heather hit a tornado DDT like really early on in the match. And I thought that should have happened much later on. But Mr. Elegance took too long to hit his finisher. And Rich Swann got a quick roll-up victory out of that. And he gave Mr. Elegance his first singles loss in TNA. And then the Righteous showed up afterwards. They have their eyes on BDE joining them. We had Jada Stone pick up the victory over Heather by Elegance to advance to the finals. This was almost over at the start, and it was very, very fast-paced. A lot of good reversals in this match. It almost ended in a double countout. But they both got in. Jada Stone hit that stunner and got the victory. And I'm kind of glad that it's not in Elegance brand finals. But I am super torn with who I want to win that championship. Because if you asked me at the start of this, Jada Stone surely would have been somebody I wanted in the finals or at least near the finals. But with M going as far as she did, man, I really want to see M get that championship, but at the same time, I want to see Jada get that title as well. They had a Zoom call between Elena Black and Zaya Brookside to hype up their match for Lockdown. I thought this was a good segment. I don't think we've ever seen a segment like this with Zoom before, so I thought that was very interesting. But it just hypes up their match at Lockdown. You had Brian Myers pick up the victory over Fabian Aichner to gain the lethal lockdown advantage. Brian attacked Fabian Aichner before the bell. But Aichner is so damn good, and I'm so glad that he's getting this opportunity in TNA to shine. Even though he lost here, this was a fantastic match for him. Brian ends up low-blowing Fabian Aichner behind the referee's back. He hit the roster cut, gets the victory, gets the advantage. You had Harley Hudson pick up the victory over Alicia Edwards to, I guess, keep her job. Earlier, Harley had a call with Tracy Brooks, and Tracy just hyped her up. And I thought that was an interesting segment to have that and the Zoom call. When do we ever see stuff like that in pro wrestling? I thought that was cool. And Daria, especially because we're in that like era. Maybe, I mean, people still use Zoom, but we're in that technology era. Daria Ray did commentary here, and I liked the banter back and forth between her and Tom. I thought that very much so added to the match. Eddie's distraction allowed for Alicia to have the upper hand at some point. Harley Hudson reversed Edwards and got a quick roll-up to get the victory there. And then Alicia Edwards attacked afterwards. Eddie joined in. I didn't think we would see that, but he joined in, and Jada Stone actually made the save. That hypes up Lethal Lockdown. We had the Hardys, Elijah and Moose pick up the victory over AJ Francis, Frankie Kazarian, and the Nemeth brothers. This got super chaotic. I literally forgot who was legal, which I feel like you had to have expected that to happen. But and I also fully expected the faces to lose this, given what I thought was going to take place at Lockdown. Now I don't know. And then after this match, you had they cut to backstage. Cedric Alexander was taken out. We saw Moose get taken out last week, which I feel like, I don't know if they mentioned that during the main event, but Cedric now got taken out. Who is taking them out? I'm sure we're going to find out next weekend. Not next weekend, this weekend at Lockdown. Taking place in Chicago, Illinois, Credit One Union Arena. We're going to be seeing the Hardys face off against the Nemeths in a steel cage for the TNA Tag Team Championships. I am going to say the Hardy Boys retain. But that main event had me thinking, like, maybe the Nemeths pick up the victory, but I'm going to stick with the Hardys. We have Rosemary and Allie defending the Knockouts Tag Team Championships against the Elegance Brand. Rosemary is still nowhere to be found. So do we see Allie find a partner, or do we just see the Elegance Brand beat Allie? I don't know. Part of me wants to pick Demon Bunny to retain, though. Steel cage match, Elijah versus AJ Francis. I am going to say Elijah. Steel cage match for the International Championship. Mustafa Ali looks to regain that title against Jason Hotch. Jason Hotch has to win that. Frankie Kazarian versus Moose escape the cage. I am going to say Moose. Last man standing steel cage match for the X Division Championship, where if Leon Slater loses, his previous title reign is erased from history, which is the dumbest thing I have ever heard in, well, not the dumbest thing, but pretty up there for one of the dumbest things. So I'm going to say Leon Slater wins that championship. Maybe Cedric doesn't even make it based off of what happened at the end of that episode. And then we don't have that stupid stipulation. Lethal Lockdown match. The System taking on Ricky Sosa, Fabian Aichner, Casey Navarro, and Jada Stone. I am going to say Ricky Sosa, Fabian Aichner, Casey Navarro, and Jada Stone. It wouldn't shock me if The System won. But I'm going to say they lose that match. And, of course, a steel cage match for the TNA Knockouts Championship. Zaya Brookside versus Elena Black. I feel like it has to be Elena Black, but I don't want to see Zaya Brookside lose that championship just yet. I feel like she hasn't had that title for this long yet. So, I'm, like, super torn. Maybe we'll see Zelina Vega debut. Because Zaya Brookside literally just won it in June. So, I don't think she should lose it yet. But with Elena Black, it's like, what's next for Elena Black after, if she loses this, what's next for Elena Black? So maybe it ends in some sort of disqualification. Maybe there's some sort of trickery. I don't know. We'll see. So that is TNA Impact, TNA Lockdown. Hey, Brennan, got any shout outs?
This is Miss Piggy, and you should be listening to moi instead of Brandon's shoutouts.
So many things were announced and shown off at D23. So that is first shoutout. There are some like negative things about D23, but if you don't know what that is, just picture Comic-Con for all things like Disney, including the movies, Marvel.
It is
the parks.
It is interesting. Like I want to see a video. Like I mean, like a video of the inside of it, because I saw some, where like they were going to the pin booth and stuff like that.
Did you
and
it really see looked... the D23 pin that they had there that was like
the gigantic? Giant one? Yeah. Did you see how much they're selling for?
I didn't, but it's, I mean, a like, lot of stuff there. I mean, they had, dude, they had Princess like Diary ears of... that people were like, I need those ears. And they were like limited, such a limited quantity.
These are selling for like thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
It's insane.
So
like, it's absolutely insane.
So one of the things that they showed off that would, I guess, technically affect me was Piston Peak National Park, which replaces Rivers of America in Magic Kingdom. And prior to D23, the only thing that we really knew was that it's going to be a Cars ride just taking place in that whole area where Rivers of America was. They showed off that it's going to be two rides now. So I thought that was pretty cool. We also found out, this is where it's like, kind of like, I don't get it. We found out that Jamie Lee Curtis and Bryan Cranston are going to voice the characters now for Carousel of Progress.
Boo.
And I feel like I don't think they needed to be celebrity roles there. Not to say, like, it's just... I mean, Jess Harnell was the singing voice previously. I think he could have just done the voice. Like, why? Not that I don't think Bryan Cranston has the voice to play John. I think he actually really does have the voice for John. I just would have preferred.
I think so too, but I don't think I think he could have changed the voice anyways, but even still.
I would have kept this. If Jess Harnell can actually do the voice, I don't know. Like, does Bryan Cranston sing?
I'm not sure. Oh, and here, like, there's pins going for like $2,000.
Yeah, I mean, there is merchandise that will sell for crazy amounts of money there.
There's a pin set, Enchanted Gowns full set pin set going that sold on eBay for $9,999.
Must be nice. Like,
and then here, $6,000.
They also announced that they announced again, I feel like for like the ninth time that they'll be updating Spaceship Earth, but it was a very vague sentence. So I don't know what they're going to be up to. It kind of made it seem like they're changing all the scenes, and I really don't want that. I think the ride itself right now, for what they have, the only thing that needs updating is, like, the ending. That's all that they really need to update. So I don't, like, I want all those beginning scenes where we go through the history and time where we meet the ancient, the Romans, and we see the Phoenicians and stuff like that.
I don't know. For me, something that I don't understand is, like, they made a big announcement that they're going to be fixing the Yeti.
That's a huge announcement. I don't care about that ride. I don't care about Expedition Everest. But that...
So...
The Yeti has been broken for 20 years.
Exactly.
Almost 20 years.
Okay. So...
So there are so many different people who don't even have a single clue that it's not... It's that it used to be a working animatronic for many people,
dude,
for the past 20 years. It was just a scene where you got to it and it would flash and they would call it the Disco Yeti. Oh,
dude, you can't. It's broken for 20 years. Why the hell can you not do your freaking job?
They said,
fix a broken down animatronic.
They said that in order to fix it, they would have to completely take apart the whole ride. I don't know how true that
is. No.
And then it was also they were waiting for technology to actually catch up. Because right now, the animatronic that they had was too heavy to where it would damage itself. I believe that's why they finally announced it. Technology has caught up to where it's not going to be a super heavy animatronic. They're able to strip it and then put in a brand new animatronic there where it's not going to be destroying itself, basically.
It just doesn't make sense to me.
If you think about it, technology 20 years ago versus technology now is not even close to the same.
But it doesn't, it doesn't compute to me that it takes 20 years to fix this and that you have
because
to destruct
if they were going
the entire
to...
thing.
Because if they were going to fix it, it would have just broken again. So that's such a waste of money. That's... Now they know they have the technology where they can fix it, where it's not going to break down the way the old Yeti did.
I'm calling BS on that. And
I hate going on that ride, and once it's complete, whenever that is, I have no idea. They didn't announce it. I'll have to go on it again. So that's
something I hate. I don't know.
And I was really...
I think that some... Uh-huh.
I was going to say I was really looking forward to that panel, the parks panel, but I found it to be beyond mid as far as announcements go. They were basically just going off of what they announced 2 years ago. I think the music and comedy bits were great. Neil Patrick Harris hosted it. I thought he did a good job there. They had Glenn Close come out reprising her role as Cruella de Vil. And then, I mean, kind of announced a Cruella ride in Villains Land. And then it came out that there's not going to be a Cruella de Vil ride in Villains Land. People are like, it's just part of the script. I mean, that's a pretty stupid thing to script if it's not a real thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that that's stupid, too.
And then it ended.
I think that...
They announced the return. Neil Patrick Harris's favorite animatronic in the history of Disney World or whatever. The return of Dreamfinder coming back to Figment. And I know I'm in that minority there. I hate the old version of that ride.
I don't know it. I don't know what this announcement was. Everybody was flipping out over the Figment stuff, but I didn't get it.
And they love Dreamfinder. I think he's so...
But I don't know what Dreamfinder is.
Creepy. Dreamfinder was a character on the original ride, and it was literally them two. It wasn't this. It's not even close to the ride that is there right now. Right now, we have Eric Idle. We have Dr. Nigel Channing. He's probably going away. We're not going to get him anymore. For many kids, many generations, even more so than the Yeti. This goes back to, I don't know, like 83 or so.
Huh. I'm not sure. But there's so many other things. Like, I marked out for the stuff with the Marvel.
Yeah.
Everything that they mentioned with the Marvel, the new lineup for the X-Men. I marked out for all of that, especially with the announcement of Mr. Sinister being in there. I thought that was awesome.
But yes, Tangled, yeah, I mean, all the Marvel announcements and stuff I thought were cool.
Yeah, Tangled live action. I still want to see Tangled. I haven't seen Tangled yet.
It's a good film. I've only seen it once, but I thought it was really good.
Yeah, Percy Jackson new season. I always forget that it's an actual streaming TV show, too.
Bit disappointed that Edge wasn't part of that panel. But yeah, this was...
They announced a ton.
This was almost a borderline anti-shout-out, but because of that panel. But there were so many more... like cool things that outweigh that.
I mean, for me, I mean, I just want to see some stuff updated in the Anaheim by the time I get there,
which I believe will be updated. I mean, they announced Tomorrowland. I don't know when that'll be. And then they announced all the Marvel stuff for Disneyland as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, like that door coaster sounds insane,
which is Hollywood Studios.
What is it? Like a 40. Wait, Hollywood Studios.
That's Disney World.
Oh, damn.
That's Monstropolis coming. They closed the Muppets for that. We got no Muppet.
I thought
any sort of Muppet announcement. There was a Seth MacFarlane announcement where he's coming out with a Muppet album.
So then I don't know which. So what are they doing with the one in California?
They're getting Tomorrowland updated or whatever, and then they're getting all the Marvel stuff.
That was off the top of my head. I thought that there was going to be monster stuff in there too, or they were taking down the monsters?
No, they're building Pandora, which is Avatar, and people are like, "We don't want Pandora, we want Zootopia." The stuff that they showed off for Pandora looks really nice there, too. But I'm not an Avatar fan. I've never seen the movies. But so, doesn't really affect me there.
Well.
But my next shout-out goes to Don't Say Good Luck, which stars Sunny Sandler, who ends up getting the lead in her high school musical. She has to deal with her mom... the return of her mother's cancer. played by, the mother is played by Melanie Lynskey. Max Greenfield plays her father. Steve Buscemi and Bebe Neuwirth are the grandparents. I think John Lovitz was great in this film. He plays a worker at one of the, the family owns a deli or whatever. A bagel place, maybe? I don't remember. But I thought he was really good. Stephanie Beatrice was good here. But Sunny Sandler gets to show off her singing here. I wish we had more scenes at that bagel store, though, because that, I mean, John Lovitz, there was one scene that they, like, literally cut off right before I wanted it to. I don't know if there's, like, a blooper reel or, like, an extended version of that scene, but I thought it was so funny. And, like we were talking about with Zilafa, too. Even though her dad is Adam Sandler, I don't think you have to mention Nepo Baby in your review, if you're, especially if you're a professional movie reviewer.
Yeah, why do people have to throw out the term Nepo Baby just because it's a child of a celebrity? I mean, a lot of these people...
She clearly has talent. She very clearly has talent.
I mean, did it help her get a role? Maybe it helped her get an audition, but even still, it's like calling Charlotte Flair a Nepo. I mean, both her parents are also
producers on the film, but still, this film, regardless of... I mean, but even
still, like calling... I don't know. It's not like they're taking advantage of their abilities and stuff. They're still
putting in the worst of it. And they're literally putting in the freaking work.
Yeah, so I don't get it.
And I thought this was a very well-done movie. I see a lot of, like, teenage girls reviewing this film and stuff, like, saying, how dare Adam Sandler have a movie like this? Because they go into it thinking it's a comedy, and then they're just bawling their eyes out by the end of this movie.
That's funny.
So I thought this was a very well-done film. I would 100%, I don't even know if I said it's on Netflix. So,
what movie?
Don't Say Good Luck.
No.
So, I 100% recommend that. My next shout-out goes to Frank Beard, who unfortunately passed away this week at the age of 77. He was the drummer of the legendary Rock and Roll Hall of Fame group ZZ Top. Ironically, the only member without a beard. They're known for songs like LaGrange, Sharp Dressed Man, Tush, Legs. And in 2016, I got to see ZZ Top perform at Jones Beach. Very much so enjoyed that show. I think that was probably one of like the best shows at Jones Beach that I've ever seen. It's like the perfect kind of music to sit waterside and listen to. So it's a shame for that. My last shout out, Hayden Panettiere, also unfortunately passed away this week at the age of 36.
Awful. And just awful.
Last week I spoke about how I've known of Hilary Duff for almost my whole life, and Hayden is literally right there with her. All the way back to A Bug's Life, Dinosaur, she was a voice actress in. Remember the Titans, which I think she absolutely kills in every single scene that she's in that film. Joe Somebody, I saw that in theaters. Ice Princess, Malcolm in the Middle, she was on.
For me, it's Heroes.
Heroes was a big thing. She was in the Scream franchise.
It was weird because I was just looking at, like, I had a student who posted a picture and they were streaming Heroes. And I was like, I said Yatta, and I was like thinking, I'm like, I should probably go back and watch Heroes, and yeah, just awful.
One of my favorite movies is I Love You, Beth Cooper, and whenever I'm flipping through the movie channels and that's on, I'm 100% watching it. Eve Torres, by the way, interviewed Hayden Panettiere for WWE when that movie came out. They scrubbed that from the internet, though. That's not there anymore. But, she was also in Nashville. That was a huge show for her as well. And she released music here and there throughout her career for like different soundtracks, but we got more of her singing through Nashville. And I wish we got to hear more from her. And at D23, when Jerry Bruckheimer was inducted as a Disney legend, they showed a clip from Remember the Titans. She wasn't in the clip, but when in that moment, I was like, it would be cool if she was there. And I think she has so much. She's contributed so much to Disney that I would say that she could 100% be a Disney legend as well. So it's very, very unfortunate to see that news come out.
Yeah, so shocking. It's so young. So way too young.
So go spend your weekend, watch her movies. Go listen to ZZ Top. Listen to her soundtrack, songs, and everything. So those are my shout-outs. Now it's time for
Our
Mark Out Moment of the Week.
That is right, our Mark Out Moment of the Week. I have literally one main wrestling one, and then the rest are basically Disney. But I will say, I saw people making fun of this brand new t-shirt that came out last week for Haku. It's a shirt that says, "That was awesome. Your nose," and that popped the absolute heck out of me when I saw it. If you know the story, I think it should be even funnier, but people are like, how dare they do this for Haku?
Why?
It makes him seem so bad, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, do you know the story?
Yeah, I know the story behind it. It's not funny, blah, blah, blah.
Like, shut up.
He is bad.
He bit somebody's nose off, and they made a shirt that says, "Got your nose." Like, that is hilarious.
And he doesn't, like, he is a bad person. Nobody hides, like, if anybody says, like, if they're talking about street fights.
No, I don't think bad as in, like, intended, like, oh, lock him up sort of bad. I mean, like, bad as in, like, he's supposed to be a badass, and now he looks like a weak piece of garbage.
I'm sorry, but that doesn't make him... If you know the story, you know that that's the furthest thing. You know, I feel like anybody saying that he's viewed as weak or anything like that, then you need to do your education on who Haku is.
Yeah, I like I said, pop me big time there.
Mm-hmm.
You have any other mark out moments, or should I continue?
I marked out for really that Marvel stuff. I really marked out for that. I did see Spider-Man as well.
Oh, wow.
And I marked out for.
Well, a so few you saw the film in theaters, I assume, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Do you understand what I was saying when I said that it's not a Spider-Man film? Like, it's literally just a stepping stone to something else. Like,
I mean, it's funny. I tried to actually think about that during the movie at times, and I didn't see. Like, to me, it was still a Spider-Man movie, and I enjoyed it.
I also enjoyed it, but it just wasn't a Spider-Man film for me.
That's the thing. Yeah, for me, it was a Spider-Man film, and I still viewed it as a Spider-Man film. And I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was well done. I thought it was entertaining. I thought that there were highs and lows of it. And there was never a point where I was fatigued during the movie. Like, when I saw Project Hail Mary, I was, like, legit falling asleep. And during this movie, there was no parts where it was a dull moment where I was just like, I almost feel like you're painting it out
that I thought this, but I need to say I agree with you there.
That's the thing I don't understand. Why? So I don't understand from what you were saying, like, the hate behind the movie. I thought that everybody did well. I mean,
if you really think about it, was it a Spider-Man movie? Like, come on.
Yeah.
Was Spider-Man in it? Yes.
Yeah. But why wouldn't it be?
But it was a stepping stone for,
I mean, yeah,
whatever they announced at D23, I guess, perhaps. Should we just say it? I mean, it's been long enough.
Okay, yeah, spoiler ready. If you don't know by now what the movie is about, you're pretty much living under a rock, and that's on you, because this has been out for 2 weeks already, or just over, and you haven't seen the movie yet. If you're listening to this podcast, and you're going to get all bothered about being spoiled, that's on you. If you're that excited for this movie, spoiler, fast forward right now, Jean Grey's in it. Like, it's a stepping stone to the X-Men movie. So the thing
which,
is,
by
is
the way,
me,
with that announcement from D23, it's a damn shame that, I mean, as of right now, obviously there's different universes and stuff, but it's a damn shame that we're probably most likely never going to see Kiki Palmer play Rogue. I think she would have absolutely killed it in that role, but
I disagree. I can't see Kiki Palmer as Rogue.
I 100% could see her as Rogue.
Rogue?
Mm-hmm.
I disagree. I can't see that at all.
100%.
At all. Yeah.
She has that energy to play Rogue.
Doesn't really do the trick for me. I think that the casting's fine with what they did, but this movie.
No, I'm not talking about this casting specifically, because this is obviously a much, no offense to Kiki Palmer, a much younger casting.
Yeah, I thought that it was just totally fine.
Also, by the way, I thought for sure Adam Driver was in Fantastic Four. Is that crazy or what?
Fantastic Four.
Yeah, I looked it up and people were just like wanting him to be in the Fantastic Four. I was like, maybe that's what I'm misremembering.
Oh, gotcha. That would make sense.
Because they announced him as Sinister Minister. And I was like, another like Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans gimmick, but no, he's not in the MCU yet.
Yeah, this is his debut into the MCU, but I think that I thought that the movie was very, very good. And everything with Jean Grey, I think, was done very well. I think that it was done very well.
Yeah, I still don't know what you mean,
it's a stepping stone, but to me, it's still a Spider-Man movie.
If you go back and compare this to the other films, those other films feature Spider-Man as Spider-Man so much more. This, they don't even remember who he is.
We barely got
Spider-Man as Spider-Man.
No, there was still a good amount of Spider-Man as Spider-Man.
It just wasn't the same.
I don't know.
For me,
it
wasn't the same.
Yeah, no. I got you.
You have other...
But I don't.
Other markout moments?
No.
Well,
no.
D23, they did a Disney Rewind concert, and Jodie Benson had performed Part of Your World. She's Ariel, Little Mermaid. And then she came back out later on, and she's like, you know, I've been performing that song for almost 40 years, and I'm feeling spicy. And when I said that, someone was streaming it live on TikTok, and, which they were going to air it on Disney Plus the next day, I believe it was. So it's on Disney Plus right now if you want to watch that. Spoiler alert, I guess. And as soon as she said, I'm feeling spicy, I marked the absolute heck out. I got goosebumps because I was like, I think she's about to sing Poor Unfortunate Souls. And then she went and performed Poor Unfortunate Souls, and she absolutely crushed it. She sounded a lot like Pat Carroll doing Ursula. So I thought that was really cool. Like, that was a big... I thought that was probably the coolest, like, moment from D23.
Mm-hmm.
They also, the night before at Disneyland, they had a bunch of Disney princesses. I think it was called Disney Princesses, the Ultimate Concert or something like that. Also on Disney Plus. And they had Brandy there perform A Dream Is a Wish Your Heart Makes as Cinderella. Paige O'Hara and Susan Egan did songs from Beauty and the Beast. Jodie Benson and Halle Bailey performed Part of Your World together. You had Ali'i Carvalho and Catherine Laga'aia both perform songs from Moana. Leia Salonga and Brandy performed A Whole New World. And then Leia did Reflection from Mulan. Judy Kuhn did Colors of the Wind. Anika Noni Rose did Almost There from Princess and the Frog. And then they all performed When You Wish Upon a Star. And I wish they would take a lineup like that on tour and add other Disney musicians to it.
Mm-hmm.
During that other concert, the Rewind, you had Bill Farmer as Goofy performing. Like, I want to see stuff like that live. I feel like that's like a no-brainer sort of thing to tour. Whether or not they ever do, I feel like Jody Benson teased something for next year that seems like it's probably going to be a Hollywood Bowl gimmick, because Hollywood Bowl seems to get stuff like that. They have the South Park concert, which I wish I could have seen. And then, of course, from D23, they had the Disney Legend ceremony, like I mentioned earlier. The Rock became a Disney Legend. And I popped big time because The Rock asked everybody, his daughter was there, Ava, Simone, whatever you want to refer to her as, sitting in the crowd. He asked everybody there to sing her happy birthday. To, like, I don't know if to embarrass her or whatnot, but I thought that was hilarious. So if I was her, I would 100% be like, Bob Iger once sang me happy birthday. Lin-Manuel Miranda sang me happy birthday. The Jonas Brothers sang me happy birthday. So I thought that was a cool moment to have between the two of them there.
Mm-hmm.
So, all in all, and you could go watch, there's the all the performances from D23 on, well, most of them, I should say, on Disney Plus. So, those are the Mark Out moments of the week. That is episode 811. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow us on Twitter at Marking Out, at BTTG161 on all platforms, at Chris Sweendog, CMSweeney85, David PTDPT. By the way, our theme song turns 15 this week, so thanks to Ring Rope Rebellion there. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Marking Out. YouTube and Instagram are Marking Out 11. ProWrestlingTees.com/Marking Out if you'd like to support us like that. At Marking Out on TikTok, you can rate, review, subscribe on all platforms, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify Podcasts, YouTube, markingout.com, and we wish you the
best
of luck in your future endeavors. Have a fantastic week.